Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that didn't go quite to plan for England at Wembley, but it's a huge day for Scotland after that 0-0 draw in the Euros. We will dissect that in detail on today's episode of the Gaming Pod and have all the big talking points from the Euros for you. So much to talk about. Let's get right into it.
Wilson Hanley going for it. Dyke tries up the line by Reece James.
Yeah, another day full of big talking points and fallout. England at Wembley, that didn't quite go to plan. We will talk about that right now. David Wiener with you once again for another episode. Joined today as well by Jake Rosengarten, our Optusport journalist who's been on deadline duty for today. How are you, Jake?
Good, mate. Good. Better than Gareth Southgate, I'd imagine.
I would imagine. And to help us go through, I've got my old Gagapod sparring partner back for the first time these Euros, Michael Bridges. Bridgie, glad to have you on to pour through today's game, but sorry for having you on to pour through the details of today's game. Have you had about an hour now to dissect it? How are you feeling now?
Still as disgusted as I was when I was watching it, Dave. And yes, it was a really lackluster performance by England. I've got to say, they looked sluggish. The ball movement was not what I expected from the attacking players that were on display. And I don't want to take anything away because I thought Scotland, with the tactics that they produced, with the midfield that they had in there, the work rate, they were superb. So they, for them to nullify England, you can see that as a positive, or was it England just not at the races and looking one-dimensional?
Well, Jake, you were watching it really closely, pouring through the details. There's a great read on the Optusport app. If you want to read that, watch the highlights, do whatever you need to do to get through the game. What was it? Scotland were immense, and it wasn't just the derby. It wasn't just the emotion. In a footballing tactical sense, you can't pick too many holes in their performance.
Oh, full credit to Steve Clarke. Absolutely. Changes worked to perfection. Kieran Tierney back into the side. I mean, you got to remember as well, Scotland have pulled off this performance. They've completely blunted an England side with weapons like Sterling, like Kane, like Foden and Mason Mount. They've got one recognised centre-back in their 11. Playing a back three with Grant Hanley, who played in the championship this season with Norwich, as their only centre-back.
And that's the impressive thing. McTominay dropping back in alongside, Tierney coming back in on that left-hand side of the a defensive three. And like you say, two of them, they're not known for their centre-half stature. And Tierney's a small guy, he's got an engine. And it just worked fantastic. I thought the balance was brilliant. And one man that all Scotland fans have been crying out for, well, there was actually two. There was Patterson and there was Gilmore. And thankfully we saw one of them, and that was Billy Gilmore. And he just played at the heart of that midfield, broke up all the attacks, and it was a brilliant battle between him and Mount, who play against each other in training at Chelsea, and that was a phenomenal battle. And when you get your first full debut for your national team against England and you come away with the man of the match, what a memory he has got.
Well, yeah, him and who was more happy this morning? Was it Billy Gilmore or was it Thomas Tuchel? Him watching that game, watching Mount and Gilmore just go at it in the midfield. Well, really great stuff.
Well, when you've been training with N'Golo Kante, Jorginho, Mateo Kovacic, you're competing for some places, and that step up showed today. And I referenced it on the couch. That was a big theme that Steve Clarke was talking about before the game. Was that, why would we have any fear? We're not the plucky underdogs that we were of, you know, 25 years ago. We've got players that play at this level week in, week out, and I thought that really showed. But what was it that made Billy Gilmore, who, by the way, on an individual level, didn't misplace a pass in the first half, 91% accuracy through the game, won more ball recoveries than any other player on the field, played more passes than any other Scotland player, an influential performance. What made that midfield three of Scotland completely boss a midfield three that everyone was waxing lyrical about after the Croatia game?
It was the tracking, the way they tracked the players. Calvin Phillips was inspirational against Croatia. I think he run the most kilometres in the game of anybody. So Gilmore must have just been behind him because he was tracking him as well. McGregor was doing a job on him. And McGinn, I think he's a fantastic player. Everywhere they went, from England players, they track them, they stop them. And on the transition moments, when you've got Robertson on the left-hand side as a wing-back and O'Donnell, who should have scored, the you know, Pickford had to make an unbelievable save from his volley. And it was one wing-back cross from Robertson to find the other wing-back of Scotland. It shows that they got numbers forward and the midfield allowed that to happen. Knowing they had the defensive security with McTominay, Hanley, and Tierney at the back. They had it was a nice, nice blend. I can't believe I'm big in Scotland up here, by the way.
We won't tell anyone, Bridgie. Don't worry, it's fine. But Stephen O'Donnell's no Trent Alexander. I'm a Liverpool fan, I'll admit that. But when you look at, firstly, John McGinn, superb player. One of the most underrated players in the Premier League for mine. But Billy Gilmour, I think as much as it was rising to the occasion for Billy Gilmour, his positioning and his aggression, I thought he was just at it all game. I mean, even from the get-go, he was just at players' throats. He was throwing himself about. There was pressure on him. There were players breathing down his neck, and he was just calmly just moving the ball along and just helping Scotland through their work.
I said before the game, you look at that team sheet and the lineup of all them players, and you take on the, you know, the magnitude of the amount of, I would say, value of the England squad over the Scotland squad. You're going to say, yes, England. This is country against country that have never played against each other for a long time. All them Scotland players, they felt the weight of their nation on their shoulders and they did not let them down. They ran their socks off till the last minute. And it's not just about the work rate. When they had the ball to play, they stepped up and shined. They didn't allow England to dictate the play.
That was a big difference because against the Czech Republic, there was a lot of discussion about how many out balls, long balls that Scotland played because they didn't quite have enough glue to get that synergy going. Now, clearly it might look like now that Clark was actually holding Billy Gilmour back for this big stage. We're only looking from outside in, but it's very possible because he was let out of the gates here, but he added that layer to their play where they actually, at times, in a footballing sense, were right in this picture.
The other one I want to add in on that, though, so Billy Gilmour comes into the 11, so too does Kieran Tierney, but Shea Adams actually playing up top. So you think about the long balls that Scotland were playing against the Czech Republic. Yep. Because you got Lyndon Dykes up there by himself. He's a big boy, Aussie born. He's holding the ball up. That's what he's there for, up in the air. When you got Shea Adams around him, and Adams was really nicely dropping into that pocket of space around Declan Rice, picking up the ball and helping Scotland sort of build something, as much as sending long balls is kind of somewhat their game occasionally.
You know your stuff, by the way, because it was lovely to watch. The two of them that played up there, Shea Adams and
Lyndon Dykes.
Lyndon Dykes, thank you. They were pinning Stones and Mings, and they were playing. What I mean by pin them is you go and play up against them, so it's man on man. And then what allows that to do is when Declan Rice is screening, Adams was dropping either side of him absolutely superbly off. And there was a lot of times when Mings was having a go at Declan Rice saying, you should have picked him up. And there was times when he said, well, if you don't tell me and you don't drop in with him, he's going to get on the ball and get space. So now when you are a striker, there's nothing better when you see the opposition squabbling and arguing, saying you should have, he should have this, because you know you're in the winning hand and you know you've got the upper hand. And I think the dynamics of them two, again, it's a tick for Clark. They got it spot on.
And another dynamic of that was there a couple of times we looked up and went, oh, there's a lot of space here for one of the midfielders to glide into and play and look wide and look to pick the pass. And that was another consequence of that play. Now, you mentioned off the top England's lethargy. Now, of course, Scotland ran, they ran, that's a big part of it. Why the lethargy? Why at this stage, the big stage, a derby atmosphere where even Gareth Southgate said before the game himself, we have to match them for drive and passion as a minimum and then the football will take care of itself. Is there any excuse?
No, there's not. There was too many players off their game. Harry Kane, yet again, for the second game, was off the boil. Sterling's touches in the game, I thought, were horrendous. He didn't make as many dynamic runs as he did last time. Mason Mount was trying to make things happen. And I don't think Calvin Phillips was able to get on the ball as much as he did, and that's credit to Scotland. I don't think he was underdone because his work rate stats suggest that. England really, I thought the ball movement was terrible from at the back, left to right. It was very lethargic. And what I mean, when you've got a zippy surface and it's wet, I'm expecting shift the play from one side to the other. And England didn't utilise James and Luke Shaw as much as they should have done because it was congested in that midfield area. There was five midfielders of Scotland and England were trying to make things happen and they didn't. They didn't get the overloads and 2v1s down the outside. And I was crying on for Jack Grealish to come on. He did. Did he have an authority? No, but there was a couple of chances created through him by trying something different.
And it's an interesting proposition for a team that was hailed for their attack. But Scotland, again, a tick to Steve Clark in terms of when to press, when to hold back, when to stay back. England had to play what was in front of them, and they couldn't break them down with the selection that Southgate put out there.
I actually think it's fascinating, Dave, as well. When you look at all of the weapons at Southgate's disposal, especially at this tournament, there are actually so many of them. We wax lyrical about them all the time. To put in a performance that lacked creativity this much against Scotland on the biggest stage at Wembley on this occasion that's been hyped up as this enormous game, yeah, I think says everything about the doubts that still remain over Gareth Southgate, Bridgie.
So here's one for you. Johnny Aloisi nailed it this morning when we were chatting. I look at the fixtures prior to this tournament. England's two matches. You had Alexander-Arnold playing. You had Saka playing. Ward-Prowse. All these players that were not going to be taken to the tournament. It was almost like a token gesture by Southgate. Say, oh, there's a game for you boys. We're going to the tournament. It's a build-up matches for the tournament. And until John mentioned that, I'm looking at going, yeah, it's damn disrespectful, because Italy going into their friendlies before this, they didn't want to lose. They took it seriously. They played their team, and they look like they've got a team that has the dynamics. Mm. The players understand what they have to do. England look lost. It's almost, it was disjointed. It was ugly to watch. It wasn't pretty. And Harry Kane, for me, has got a lot on his mind with his Tottenham future. The speculation of that, he looks like he's underdone. I don't know if he's hiding injuries. Twice he has come off and justified. And it's not good when your captain is not performing on a major tournament.
I agree with you, Bridgie. And talking about the disjointedness and the fact that Southgate is sort of chopping and changing with the 11 and doesn't really know, and those combinations aren't really there. When you watch Harry Kane play for Tottenham, as you do very often, that combination, Harry Kane and Son, they're near telepathic, and that's a big feature of Harry Kane's play, is that he needs understanding from the players around him. He needs that service to really let him work, let him do what he does. And I think that those combinations aren't really there in this England team.
Well, can I throw a spanner in the works there as well, where we waxed lyrical all season, how Kane dropped deep and that created that dynamic for the Spurs. But that was the last thing England actually needed today. They needed someone that they could actually use as that focal point to allow the supposed dynamic duo on the side of him to come into the game.
Yeah, and the dynamic duo weren't there. Foden, came off. Sterling didn't get the juices flowing neither. When I think Sancho was out there as well, you got Rashford. Rashford, I thought, did more in the time that he was on the field than Harry Kane's done the last two matches. Mm. So is Harry Kane droppable? Yes, he is. Definitely when he's underdone here in this tournament.
It's going to be a huge talking point over the next little while. Just one little caveat that the Manchester City, Chelsea, Manchester United players arrived so late into the England camp. It's not an excuse because these players are at a grand level. But then you've got the fact that sometimes when you're spoilt for options, and everyone was saying Gareth Southgate didn't know his 11 going into the tournament, that's actually not an advantage. The fantasy football, you actually want a solid 11 that you know is going to get the job for you with combinations.
Talk and gesture for the performances in the fixtures of players that were not going to go at the tournament, so why the hell are they playing in the fixtures beforehand?
Now, guys, I'm going to ask you about what happens now with Kane and with the 11 going forward, but while I give you a second to think about that, we caught up a little bit earlier with The Athletic's Dom Fifield, who called this performance the reality check that came after everyone maybe got a little bit carried away after the Croatia game.
He looked lost all night. He looked leggy, he looked off the pace. He looked crestfallen, really, and he was substituted and frustrated as he departed 16 minutes from time. But I think England needs someone to stretch the play on the flanks. I mean, this is a squad that's got Jadon Sancho there waiting for his opportunity. It would have been brave for Southgate to have dropped Raheem Sterling on the back of his match-winning performance against Croatia. But I do wonder whether there's a reluctance to change things in that way within a game. When it was clear that England were just running up blind alleys and getting clogged up in that midfield area. So I wasn't surprised when Kane got substituted. He wasn't playing well enough. He wasn't offering anything. He was just getting lost. And there's nobody that should be untouchable in this England team. I can see the logic in bringing on Rashford through the middle just to see whether he could stretch things slightly. But without width, England were always going to be struggling to break them down.
So, Harry Kane. I was really interested looking at the thread from German football. I mentioned that on the couch, that was saying, geez, you must have a good attack if Jadon Sancho is not even getting near a minute of football. And I look at that and I go, well, is that dynamic of Sterling, Kane, Foden at the moment, does he go into the next game with that selection?
I would. But after watching this morning, I don't think there's any way you can start with the same front three. I mean, especially for me, this was a game at halftime especially that was crying out for Jack Grealish. Every time he has played for England, he's added that dynamism, that directness, that little bit of flash on the ball that they really need to especially break down a deep, stubborn defence like the one they faced today against Scotland. And he didn't come on until about the hour mark. Rashford obviously came on as well, but you're absolutely right, Dave. Jadon Sancho is, again, he's a player who he takes on the game. He creates things, and England just haven't had that creativity that they really need to break down a defence like
this. I don't like it when he tells me I'm right. Normally we do our best work when he tells me I'm wrong. That's when we normally get the juices flowing.
I'll leave that up to you two, but I think I would like to see some changes, definitely. The other one is Calvin Phillips has been magnificent, but today it doesn't mean that front three can change. Grealish can play in that little hold midfielder where Calvin, if he's going to, Declan Rice gives you security. Grealish there. I would like to see Grealish start the next game, and I would like to see Sancho be given a go ahead of Sterling, because me and John were arguing in the studio. There was a couple of balls where Sterling didn't get a touch. He let the ball
over the top.
And there was a couple of times in me, John saying, oh, that's a tough one to bring down. I said, John, I'm 42. I've had a great touch all my career. I could still bring that down now to this day. I haven't got the pace of Sterling. I haven't got the quality. But them touches is almost like you are switching off at the wrong times.
You heard it here first. Sterling out, Bridges in. Let's go. Czech Republic will
only
not have
for
any answer.
Touches.
Not for the long ball in behind.
No, definitely not.
Okay, we're going to talk about the England lineup before the next game. Don't get me wrong, but in the heat of the moment, Calvin Phillips, maybe this is an opportunity to get Jordan Henderson in if he is fit. That seems like a bit of an urgent consideration for a big game. Southgate has an issue now in terms of settling the mood in the England camp as well. What are you doing with your selection hat on, Bridgie? Let's face it, as a passionate England fan right now as well.
Yeah, well, I was quite happy with the balance of the back. I thought Luke Shaw did very well. He got in there. It was a bit more effective than Trippier had done, because what you allow Shaw is a left footer. You can whip the ball in. You need that kind of stuff. It just looked in the moments today that it didn't happen. James, I was happy with. Whether it's him or Walker, don't mind. The two boys at the back, for me, in Stones and Mings, good bit of balance.
We don't change it right
now. I wouldn't be changing that. The midfield might somewhere to look at, possibly. Declan Rice is doing it for me. I prefer him. You're saying Henderson? Not for me.
Not for you?
Still underdone. I still laugh at Roy Keane's comments, like, what is he there for? His card tricks? Well, no, he's very influential, and he is an influential man. But that attacking option, wherever it is in that midfield, whether it's Calvin that misses out, whether it's
Mount.
No, I'm sticking with Mount. Sticking with Mount.
So is it Grealish or Foden, or can you have them both in?
You can have them both in, and I would have them both in. I'd have Grealish for Calvin, and I shouldn't be saying that. He's a Leeds United player, but I would go with that. I'd have Foden out there, and I'd be dropping Kane, and I would be dropping Sterling.
Your front three is Foden.
Foden, Rashford, Sancho, with Grealish in behind. There you go.
Very strong.
And it is strong.
Yeah.
It's strong, and it's fresh, and it's lively, and hopefully not sort of dragged in by that. Any consequence, do you think, before we move on to just praising Scotland one more time? Daniel Storey, our columnist from England, wrote that the biggest thing now was that the mood in England, there should be no need for the feel of tragedy and travesty. The tournament is very much alive, particularly if you have a look at the routes through, the path through, it might not be the biggest disaster on the planet. What should the cold light of day, calm reaction be, dissecting this maybe tomorrow in the cold light of day?
It was a poor performance. There's no way around that. This was bad. Like this was very bad. Like this was as bad as it could have.
But Scotland
been.
Were very bloody good.
They were, but England did not offer anything going forward. They offered nothing. They didn't. I think they had one shot on target in 90 minutes of football with Harry Kane and Phil Foden, and we've been over it. But I think in the cold light of day, like reality tournament football, yeah, you have off days, and I mean maybe Southgate will be happy his off day came now rather than in the semi-finals or in the quarterfinals or in the final even. Obviously, it's a while before they get there. But I think England have so much in reserve. There are so many more levels and gears that this team can go to. I don't think it's not panic stations just yet. It's not crisis mode, although it probably will be in the English press. There's a lot of time, and they really only need a draw in the last group game to to get through, and they may even want to draw in the last group game, Dave.
It's like I said, Dave, as well. Sporty giving me grief, saying, oh, Bridges now happy if they finish second in the group. Look at the losers. Listen, we haven't lost. And the way I look at it, you don't... The tactical in psychology, when you look at the draw, it's a lot easier to finish second. Because if you finish top of this group, you're going to come up against the group of death, which is Germany, Portugal, and France. And I'm telling you, I would rather finish second and let the Czech Republic go through on the top and England finish second, because I feel it's an easier pathway coming up against Sweden, Slovakia, or help me out.
Sweden, Slovakia, Poland, or unlikely Spain. Yes. On that, Dom Fifield from The Athletic looked at that angle and he had this to say about that mentality.
So do England now rest players and try and target the easier draw by finishing second? Not a chance. That would be absolute lunacy on Southgate's part, and it's just something he won't do. It's very different to the World Cup in 3 years ago, where they won their first two matches and were through. England need to regain some momentum now. They need to go out and beat the Czechs and get the public back on side, because there were boos at the end of that game this evening. And, you know, we've grown, sadly, used to some boos pre-match when England players take the knee. But post-match, we need the crowd to have been warmed by an England performance, and they simply weren't tonight in the Wembley drizzle. So forget about targeting which side of the draw you want to be on and, you know, where you want to play your last 16 game, regardless of the fact that it will be daunting if they win the group, because it will be against one of the three teams, the three big teams in Group F. Just go out and beat the Czech Republic. Go out and win the section and regain some momentum and stoke a bit of belief again back in the country, because that this evening felt a bit like a reality check.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, and you have to say that given England have fired relative blanks in this time as well, it's really no time to be saying we're going to do this or we're. You actually got to go out there and get a performance out of it there going forward. Now, huge moment for Scotland, of course. I know Bridges said, did they win? Well, the truth...
I must have missed something, because I'm getting text messages off my mates. Well, not my mates anymore. Scott MacDonald working our show, you know, he's given the Scottish Heritage. He said, what a great day it's going to be. And I've just texted him back saying, did I miss something or did you guys win? Like, what am I missing here?
I think what we're missing is that they are so alive, and they go into this game against Croatia with the prospect in their first major tournament for decades of getting into the round of 16. And for them, that they've set themselves up perfectly to go in at Hampden Park, raucous supporters, great atmosphere against a Croatia side that still have a bit to prove in this tournament, and go out and possibly go through.
I'm just looking forward to seeing Luka Modric get a hat trick and just silence all them blooming kilts.
We'll do it.
We'll talk about that in one moment. Final word on this game will go to a beat writer from The Athletic. From the Scotland perspective, Jordan Campbell had this to say about what he described as a classic Steve Clarke performance.
You know, there's so many great standout performances tonight, and I think that's the one thing, is that you needed 11 men at the top level tonight. And you know, the likes of John McGinn just absolutely ran themselves into the ground. He said Che Adams played like a man possessed, and although he's from Coventry, he looked like a man from Castlemilk. So you know, that is a great line. But you know, Adams has really added a lot since he's came into the squad in the last few months. No, it's a terrific night for Scotland, and I thought it was just a classic Steve Clarke performance. That is when his coaching is at its best. That is what it looks like.
All right, so let's talk about it. Scotland, Croatia. You watched the Croatia game earlier in the morning for Up to Sport on Punditry with John. What did you make of that draw this morning?
Again, I was very disappointed in the first 20 minutes of the game if I'm a Croatian fan. They came out against England as well the first 20 minutes. They allowed the pressure. They came out and they had to grow into the game, and it wasn't until they went behind that they actually started playing. in Croatia again. I think Luka Modric was better in that defensive midfield role where he could, I call him the orchestra, the conductor. And I think they got harsh to Dumbai with the penalty decision.
Decision Lovren.
Lovren went up for a header with Schicht. Both of them had their arms. It was almost like a mirror image of the two of them. And Lovren has caught the elbow on Schick's face. It wasn't deliberate, in my opinion. And it's very, I thought they were very harshly dealt. But Schick still got to get up, put the goal away after he had a bleeding nose. And
if there's no bleeding nose, is there? Do you think there's a penalty?
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I think it's just the referee's seen the impact as well. I mean, me and John Aloisi finally agreed on something. We both said it wasn't a penalty. Anyway, they had to bounce back from that. Croatia did. He made changes. And Perisic, a man that I love watching, he came up with an absolutely outstanding goal. And they just couldn't get the momentum going after that. So I feel Scotland in playing Croatia, it's I can't pick it.
Yep.
You know, I cannot pick this game. Both are going in. One's going in on a high, I would say, in Scotland, definitely, and the way we've seen them celebrating. And Croatia will be very disappointed with their performance up to now in this tournament.
I feel like there's a very different feel around this Croatia team, Bridgie, compared to 2018, obviously, where they went all the way to the World Cup final. I mean, they've lost a lot of their veterans from that run. Yeah. Guys like Subasic in goal. I mean, Rakitic in midfield was a big one.
Well, why is Rakitic missed out, by the way?
He's retired from international duty.
Man, he's been a massive loss because he's had a great season.
Yeah, and Mandzukic as well. So like a spine, you've just rattled off a bit of a spine there.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think that Croatia are sort of, as much as Luka Modric is such an absolute legend, which he is, they maybe lack leadership throughout the squad and they've obviously got a bit of a fresher look, but it doesn't seem to be quite as potent or quite as, the mentality doesn't really seem to be the same for mine. But Scotland, I don't think you can get on more of a high than they were on this morning.
Not at all.
I mean, player for player, I think every single member of their 11 just rose. Mm. They were just, it was a different, like, I don't know, it's hard to put into words. They just seemed like the occasion just buoyed them to the point where they were different players almost.
And we heard about Clark's there, his performance tactically. I mean, this is Mourinho-esque tactics from back in the heyday. Get numbers behind the ball, defend, nullify the opposition space, and we will get opportunities. And he had an apprenticeship under Mourinho, but he's taken it to the new level, Clark. He's got a man in Carver that I rate very highly, worked with at Newcastle United. Tactically a genius, had a go at the main manager's job. Sadly, failed at Newcastle, but I'll tell you what, as a support staff that he has around him and another lad, Reed, that was a great player at Blackburn, heard good things about his coaching. They know what they're doing. And Clark today got it absolutely spot on.
But just a word on the Czech Republic, who we've completely ignored in this podcast because they were the sort of the unfashionable of the four teams in this group, but led by Patrik Schick, who's arguably one of the first names in the team of the tournament so far, given his goal-scoring exploits. You mentioned they might end up actually going on and topping the group and being a really prickly opponent for whoever comes second in Group F.
We've talked about England. I don't see a game plan when I watch England. All right, Scotland had a game plan today. Every time I've watched Italy, you can tell what they're doing. They've got a game plan. And the Czechs, I saw in the first two matches, they've got a very, very tall, talented, strong team. So what do? They play on that. Every opportunity they get to cross the ball into the penalty area, it's like a game of possession football. Right, is keep the ball, get your possession. They play a percentage football. Every time they get in that final third, they are looking to get numbers in the box, get as many crosses in the area as they can, and they're hoping to pick up the seconds or find Schick's head, like you showed, that he is a massive powerhouse, and it's a game plan. Fair play.
It's interesting you talk about game plans and styles and things like that, Bridgie, because I feel like this is the thing that's going to define England's entire Euro 2020 campaign, is that Gareth Southgate is the question mark. They have so much quality in every department. When you look at other sides, you look at the likes of Italy and the likes of Portugal and France and those sort of teams like Deschamps and Mancini, you get the sense that they're getting the best out of their players. I just don't feel that with England and Southgate, do you?
Nope, not at all. Not confident one bit. I was very confident going into the tournament. In the last two matches, I've been very, very let down, I've got to say, yeah.
Tough questions, Jay. Tough questions. Ask the good questions.
Very good question.
Like, yeah, very good. Like,
it's someone's got to keep Bridgie on his toes, Dave. Come on.
We are blessed next week with the games that are coming up because the group stage is going to finish with some really enticing fixtures. Tuesday morning, we've got the group finishing where Finland, Belgium, Russia and Denmark is going to go down to the wire. Then Wednesday morning, it's this group, Croatia against Scotland, Czech Republic and England, 5 a.m. next Wednesday. We're going to see how that all is going to play out and it's going to be fascinating. You talk about teams that know exactly what they're doing. Sweden 1, Slovakia 0. That is all. Move on. Yeah. Game's done.
Do you know what it is? I felt for the Optus staff this morning because we've got the mini matches, we've got the mega matches, we've got the highlights package. And the highlights package is the quick, short 3 minutes to 4 minute. We've even had trouble to fill that. So whoever had to do the mega match and the mini match and put the highlights together, I really feel for them. So if anybody listening, please don't go on and watch that one. Just go to the highlights package. But the rest of them, fantastic.
We are in the business of selling every single game of football on the planet that Optus Sport shows. But I can say without any fear that this game was a stinker. A Forsberg 77-minute penalty, though, put Sweden in an amazing position to go through to the next stage. And they'll be an annoying team to beat and face if they do so, as we saw what happened with Spain, because they... You know, whether we like it or not, they know what they're doing and they play it to their strength. So that takes us into tomorrow's preview for Sunday morning action, where Spain play Poland. And Spain have some work to do in the group because, of course, of that nil-all draw with Sweden in the last game. Luis Enrique has said that Sergio Busquets somehow is in contention to play after just getting out of quarantine.
Does he have the cure for COVID? Because if he's got it, can he share it with us?
Or the bounce back? Yeah. He's just come out of hotel quarantine into a Euros game. I loathe to believe that, particularly given the options that Enrique does have in the middle of the park. Equally, does he have the cure for something? Because Luis Enrique also says Alvaro Morata will start this game against Poland. Would you do that, Bridgie? If you were in the form of Alvaro Morata, would you start him?
Does Alvaro Morata like have photos of Luis Enrique or something? How is he starting this game after that performance and the way that Spain went about it in the first game?
He gets paid the big money to make the big decisions, and that is a big decision, let me tell you. Wow. Yeah.
Would you start him?
No.
Gerard Moreno, look, unless it's public sentiment to say that to get them on side, to make them feel good, I don't know. But
he might have the same agent. I'm not insinuating anything. But we might look into that one.
It's an interesting game, Jake, because this is Morata out of form, Lewandowski, who just can't seem to get into the groove with Poland at major tournaments. This is make or break for Poland.
Dave, come on, look what he plays with at Bayern Munich, mate.
That's
all over the field.
This is the question. How do Poland somehow, with the complete chasm of quality to Bayern Munich, actually try and get Lewandowski into their games?
I almost feel like against Spain, it's not even the forefront of the things that they need to be looking at for mine, like especially the way that Spain played in that last game against Sweden. I mean, are they even going to be able to get the ball?
Just shut them out. Just shut them out.
Yeah.
It's about shutting them out, yeah. It's not about can we get in the final third and try and support Lewandowski. No, it's can Lewandowski try and do something by himself.
And the rest of us on the break.
And the rest of us will just defend for our lives.
And clone what Sweden did the other day, because if they do that, there'll be every chance of then setting up their group stage to make that play for that second or third spot. It's a tantalizing night, guys, because Group F is the entree to that, with Hungary playing France and Germany playing Portugal.
How would you feel about that one, Dave?
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think the way Hungary handled themselves against Portugal at home at the Puskas Arena was an incredible effort.
The scenes with the crowd as well.
Absolutely amazing. That roused them. But I think it was an advantage playing Portugal first, as they got through their teething problems early doors and get their combinations going. I think France will deal with this pretty professionally and pretty robustly. And I think it'll be a pretty tough night out for the Hungarians, even though it is at home. But France need to get this job done, because this group is a group of very fine margins. And Portugal have 3 goal difference as a result of playing Hungary. So there's a goal difference factor too.
Fantastic professional analysis, and summed it up perfectly there, Mr. Wiener.
Got to take the cold forensic look, even when it involves your own heritage. Germany-Portugal is where all eyes will be on tomorrow. That is mouth-watering. Both teams still have another gear to go. Germany, my goodness, the pressure on them in this game is as much pressure as you could ever get in a group stage game.
Absolutely. I mean, this Germany vintage is almost like, we've been talking about it all the way through in the build-up, but like Joachim Löw basically getting the band back together and bringing all the, bring Hummels and Müller back in. I mean, after losing first up, they really, really need to find their feet here. Even if they're even going to finish third, because Hungary, as much as everyone's writing off Hungary, and Dave, I know you're not writing off Hungary. You love the boys. You absolutely love them. But as much as
Schwartzy loves them as well.
I mean, they're not a bad side. And they entered this tournament on, I think it was 11 games unbeaten.
Yep.
So it's, if Germany don't click into gear for this game, as many attacking weapons as they have, and they've got quality everywhere, but if they can't get it right, and Joachim Löw can't stir something from them and get it going, they're in danger. Mm. They're in big danger.
It's a big game. Looking forward to it, because Germany have got to come out and play a pragmatic, proactive style of play. And Portugal, they were, like you say, they were. I just thought they were superb the way they tried to break Hungary down. Hungary were feeding off the crowd, and I remember saying to myself, because I do talk to myself a lot, if they get one Portugal, they're going to get a few. And they showed that. But it was the manner that they just stuck to their game plan. Ronaldo, yet again, ceases to amaze. He's just phenomenal. So this is going to be an incredible match, and I cannot pick it. I can't pick this.
And I actually, the funny thing is, everyone talks about Portugal's attacking weapons. I really think that Germany are going to struggle to score against them. As good as...
Strong all over.
And I always do that. You talk about this Portugal team and you just forget that they have Ruben Dias at the back and you're like, what?
My player, not the tournament, the Premier League. He's been an absolute catalyst.
And Germany, if as solid as they were, and they were not bad against France, if they move the ball at that pace, they will not break Portugal down.
Who wins, in your opinion?
I think Portugal do win.
I'm going to go draw, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to go
Germany
draw.
May
1-1, 2-2.
Can't say I had thought about it until you asked me just then, but that's my gut. That's my gut feeling, and I think France will do it more comfortably than Portugal did at the Puskás Arena. But can't wait for that night of action, gents. Thank you so much. Good to see you both, Jake. Good stuff.
Always a pleasure,
Bridgie. Great to have you back.
Yeah, great to be back on a very depressing day. I'm just going to look forward to sending out some text messages after Croatia beat Scotland.
Sounds like Bridgie needs a hug before the pod ends.
I love a hug. I love hugs, and I need a lot today.
Good stuff, guys. Thanks so much for your time today. Everyone listening out there, hope you're enjoying our match day editions of the Euros Gang of Pod. Thanks so much for your time. And as ever, if not more than ever, until the next episode, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.